All right. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to the Beauty and the Beast Physical Therapy and Strength and Conditioning Podcast. I am joined by my co-host, Dr. Ross Childs.
How's it going, guys? You know, usually I say I hope everyone's having a nice day, but man, this rain sucks. There's no sunshine. Just puts me in a goddamn mood. It's that fucking seasonal affectiveness disorder. We get a couple days of sunshine, then it goes backwards.
Yeah.
I'm already in a fucking mood. God damn it, this is going downhill fast. But anyways, how are you?
Uh-oh. That was, I was not expecting that. We're in for a treat today, I think.
Maybe. Maybe I'll calm down.
You mellow out a little bit. I'm good. So, guys, today we're going to be talking about the press. So, Ben, think bench press, think shoulder press, think overhead press. And I think what we're going to talk a little bit more about today that might be... I guess the way we talk about it may not be different, but I don't know if you would agree with me on that. When it comes to the press, I feel like it's becoming more... People are more talking about that movement pattern. Like people that are going to PT for shoulder issues and stuff like that. It's starting to become more so. But I think that in terms of shoulder health and that kind of thing, it's much more prevalent in the strength and conditioning and the PT world than it is as much like in your general physician and that kind of thing. Like where your general physician, you go see them because your knee hurts. They tell you not to squat. You often... I, at least not in my experience, is a physician telling you, okay, your shoulder hurts, don't bench press. You know what I mean? And that's a totally... I was just thinking about that prior to the show, so that may be a fairly generalized thing. I don't know if that...
Yeah, I mean...
If you see similar patterns. I just think it's going to be coming more from, you know, us... I guess I should say it's us talking more to, like... other people in our specific field rather than, you know, the, you know, person who tells you not to squat because your knees hurt or not to deadlift because your back hurts, because that's a more general thing. Like people say knee pain and most people know what a squat is.
Yeah.
They know that it hurts their knee. So they'll tell, oh, don't squat.
And I agree with you on that one. Now that you just explained it, they just don't know enough about it. I mean,
right.
The general practitioners, they themselves don't work out, don't have much exercise knowledge. So I think that's why we don't see the overhead press or the bench press being as bastardized, demonized,
scrutinized, whatever you want to,
it doesn't matter. But I'd say, you know, if you go to a PT, and a PT who, you know, traditional PT where you'd say, oh, I hurt my shoulder bench pressing, don't bench.
Right.
And it's like, all right, well. What does that fix besides not benching?
Right.
So it's just one of those things. And hopefully, you know, like the last couple of weeks, hopefully we'll be able to give modifications that people can do. And quite often, just changing arm placement, changing the elbow angle from the torso, changing how far you let the arm come down, you know, really it's quite safe for you. Now, When we talk about, I always make sure people have a good push-up before I let them go crazy with benching. But everyone, you know, like Monday at every gym is National Bench Day.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is. Everyone comes off the weekend. Everyone just wants to bench. Am I all for the people that want to bench, you know, 500 pounds? It's cool. But again, for you, just your gen pop or general gym population... they're never going to get there, and they don't need it to be. So we need healthy shoulders, and the pushing pattern is very functional, and that's what we need. Now, the difference between a bench press compared to an overhead press is one's a vertical press, one's a horizontal press. With the vertical press, we're standing, so now it's a what we would call a closed kinetic chain exercise. It's creating more core stability versus the bench press, which really... is increasing your pushing muscles, and it's more your arms than actually your chest. But really, if we just take that position, flip the person over, really all they're doing is just a push-up. So they're trying to get themselves off the ground or whatever surface that they're on. So I've heard some people make the case that the bench press is a functional exercise. The jury's still out on that. I don't necessarily agree with it.
Are we talking all bench pressing, or do you mean specifically like a barbell?
Barbell bench press.
Okay.
Because I heard a power lifter talk about it, And again, I'm not fully sold on it, but it's the first time I've ever heard bench press and the word function used positively together.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'll have to chew on that a little bit longer and try to come to my own consensus on that. But it's interesting to think about.
Yeah, I would definitely be more inclined, without thinking about it as far into it, I would definitely be more inclined to think push-up functional motion, functional movement, and then bench press or chest press performance movement.
Yeah.
Or more, I mean, you know, obviously everything has shades of gray to it, but, you know, you think function in terms of how is it affecting your everyday life, push-up, yeah, getting up off the floor, get, you know what I mean, like, stuff like that. Where I guess technically you don't really necessarily need that. You know, if you didn't have the ability to push yourself up off the floor, you could, you know, theoretically, you know, roll onto your side, get up that way. If you're somebody that's really, really movement challenged, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I never really...
Yeah, and that's, you know, look, we just went off on a 2-minute tangent, you right, know, about that one motor pattern. So, yeah, you know, it's just funny to think about. But then again, that's why we're here to discuss all this and talk about the good and the bad and kind of see where it takes us. But, you know, when we're talking about the overhead press, you know, there are certain fundamentals that I think are lost on people, because especially either of them, you know, if you just tell someone to lay down, you know, grab the bar, let it come down to your chest and push up, or, you know, here's the weight at your chest, go ahead and push it overhead. I think it's one of the harder movement patterns for people to get, just because it's so easy to cheat.
Right.
Like a squat, yeah, we can cheat, but assuming someone has a normal squat pattern, you sit down to a squat, assuming there's no orthopedic conditions we have to worry about. But with the press, not everyone is doing a push-up. Not everyone is shoving things overhead.
Right.
So I think it's easier to cheat. I mean, there are people that can't reach their arms straight up when they're holding on to a heavy object. I mean, there are people that are arching their back way too much just to get the weight overhead. So it's very common that if I had to pick one movement pattern, like if someone said to me, out of the squat, the deadlift, and the overhead press, you have to take out one.
Oh, yeah.
I would take out the press.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and then if someone said, if you could switch one of those exercises, so same three, squat, overhead press, deadlift, you had to switch it from barbell to dumbbell to make it safer, I'd probably say overhead press.
100%. Yep.
You know, because if you think about the deadlift, a regular deadlift, a conventional deadlift, mm-hmm, doesn't work as well with deadlifts, in my opinion. You know, I want the barbell or the trap bar.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah,
I don't want
absolutely
dumbbells. With the squat, if someone's doing a squat correctly, the bar actually provides them with weight and stability.
Yeah.
When it's across their shoulders correctly.
Right, right.
If someone has the bar across their neck like an asshole, then it's going to pitch them forward. It's
right,
just the way that it is. But I just don't find that people automatically correctly lift with a bench press or an overhead press. So if I were going to change them out for safer alternatives, those would be the press would be where I would take the fixed bar path and I would change it to two dumbbells.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know, the more and more that I work with people, I mean, granted, like most of the people that I work with tend to be an older pop. I mean, older in terms of, like, you know, the people that I see in high school and college that are in there, like, ego lifting. I just mean, like, your typical 9-to-5er who isn't, you know, who is locked down in a forward position most of the time and doesn't have the shoulder mobility that they may be used to, just from years of not using it in that way.
Yeah.
I definitely lean way more towards the dumbbell because it offers so much more flexibility.
Yeah.
So, like, your hands aren't locked into a specific pattern, because if you're pressing up overhead with a barbell, I don't care how hard your hands want to move, they're not going anywhere. So you're forced into a certain range of motion or a certain pattern, whereas let's say that your internal rotation, your external rotation is limited on one side. You can still do an overhead press with the palm facing in, but if you were to, or like, you know, towards each other if you're going at the same time, but if you were to take a more pronated grip, I guess, when you're coming overhead, so palms facing away from you, you may not be able to get an actual true press, or you're going to, you know, you're going to come out away from your body and you're going to lean away from it, or you're going to arch your back. Mm-hmm. So you think that you're pressing overhead, but really you're just leaning back. Essentially, what happens is you turn it into an incline bench press, just standing.
Yeah.
So it offers more ability to go through that range of motion. And I think that presses specifically, especially the overhead press, always fall into the category of, oh, my shoulder hurts, don't press overhead. And it is so not that simple. I mean, there are a lot of other ones that are pretty simple. Like your knees.
I think it's simple in the fact it's easy to blame.
That's what I mean. Yes.
But
yes,
as far as someone saying my shoulder hurts, I'm not going to press.
Right.
It's never that simple.
Let me rephrase that. People make it seem so simple.
Yeah.
Or lead you to believe it's just, oh, it hurts, so overhead pressing is the culprit. Don't do it anymore. It is, in a joint that is as mobile as the shoulder is, it is never that simple.
Well, and you also have the people that have pain with vertical pressing, so they don't want to bench press.
Right.
You know, it's like, well, when you're laying on your back, yes, you're pressing vertical, but it's a horizontal push.
Right.
I was like, I'm surprised at the number of people, although I shouldn't be, that get surprised when benching doesn't hurt but overhead pressing does, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's both of them are a press.
Right.
But it's different motor patterns. One's up, one's out. And we just have to remember that. So, you know, and I always, from a rehab standpoint, I'll usually start people pushing a bigger deal of weight in the horizontal press first, because I can control that a lot easier. If someone has low back pain or a painful shoulder or just name it, you know, generally if we're going to see the body react, outside of having an acute traumatic shoulder event on the bench, usually the shoulder press, people are more timid. It's not that the shoulder causes vertical press causes problems. It's that people think the shoulder press is going to cause problems. So that's where I'm hoping that we can kind of push people into saying, all right, my shoulder does hurt with the press, but it was hurting before the press. Can I take these modifications and make it work?
Right.
Now, when we look at the press, I think it's a great shoulder stabilizer, especially when you can fully lock your arms out. So if you're in the bench press position, pushing straight up towards the ceiling, arms fully locked, yes, your bigger muscles are working, but your rotator cuff has to turn on. There's no two ways about it. It has to turn on, create stabilization. Just like if you're doing an overhead press and then locked it out at the top, your rotator cuff is working. It has to. There's no getting around it. Now, what we don't get from that is maybe the motor control, the proprioception, or things that we call it, with more specific type stuff, like with push-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime there's a weight-bearing exercise on the shoulders, it creates more proprioception and control. Yes, I can buy that. But then you're not able to work on strength as much. So you do have to be able to do both, and that's why I'm a huge fan of push-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Great shoulder stabilizer. Again, I think that's another pressing movement that I can't do push-ups, or my shoulder hurts, I'm not going to do push-ups. Do you know that push-ups are actually the problem? No, but I don't want to run the risk of hurting it. Well, then you run the risk of not getting back to full health then. So it's just one of those things that you have to try it, see how it goes. You know, go slow and controlled. It really can be as simple as that. Now, when someone comes into you and says, my shoulder hurts, I can't do an overhead press, kind of walk us through, how do you get someone to go through that pressing pattern without just actively avoiding it?
So it's hard. That's another one that when people come in, they're pretty locked into that, I can't do this. But usually it starts with horizontal pressing and proving to them that they can do that without pain. From there, depending on the person, maybe it's some sort of 45-degree angle sort of press, in a perfect world, it would always be some sort of landmine variation, because it's just controllable. But you know, in the gym setting where we have here, we can't always set up landmines. So could be like a, we call it a band 45 degree press. It's basically like a half kneeling press, bands on your back foot, but and you, it's mimicking the exact same motion of a landmine press. So that's kind of the in between. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, if you don't have any pain there, pressing up overhead. In a more simplified, if I'm just like checking it for the first time, okay, you have, you say you have pain going overhead, reach overhead for me. Okay, does that hurt? No. All right, let me, you know, I'm looking at the mobility. If it's like, you know, they get basically like in line with their chin, like, okay, all right, they're tight as shit. Whether or not there's, I'm not diagnosing a structural issue, but I know that coming in, they're tight.
Yeah.
So if I tell them to overhead press with that, there's probably going to be an issue somewhere. Assuming that, you know, it's not a, okay, reach up overhead, now we go through the warm-up, do some manual work, and then, oh, magically my arm's up, like ear to elbow.
Yeah.
Assuming that that's not the case. So yeah, it's that stuff, or a lot of times it's just building that trust too. You know, okay, Brett, did that hurt? No. Okay, here's like a 5-pound weight. If it's somebody that's really, really concerned about it, does that hurt? No. Okay, 10-pound weight. Does that hurt? No. Okay, I've gotten 10 reps in and it's starting to feel a little sore, a little shaky. Okay, back it off then. Go back down and wait, or, you know, we did 10 reps, maybe just do 5, you know, that kind of thing. It all varies person to person.
So I like how you pointed out the band stuff, because I think there's a lot of benefit, and I think it makes people feel stable when they're using the band. Mm-hmm. I feel like they're just in control, even though the resistance is variable. I appreciate the band a lot. So a lot of the variations that you talked about, I certainly give those as well. Now, in your experience, so with the press, you know, we have the pressing movement versus the lowering, you know, the concentric versus the eccentric. What do you think causes more pain from people, the act of pushing or the act of coming back to the starting position?
In my experience, it's more often than not the eccentric portion of whichever movement it is. So the coming back down. I would say 9 times out of 10, especially on a horizontal press. On a horizontal press, I very rarely have anybody, bench press, whatever, chest press, I very rarely have anybody feeling pain when they're pushing the weight away from them. Mm-hmm. I very, very consistently have somebody who says, I say, okay, tell me where you feel the pain. They push up, not there, and then they're slowly coming back down right there. And for those of you, obviously, this is, you know, you're not watching at home, but...
Shit, they're not.
Right. As it's coming back down, I tip my shoulder forward. I would say that more often than not, that's the problem, is people don't have the eccentric control of the press. Assuming, again, and guys, let's just lay this out there. We're assuming that no, unless you hear us say otherwise, we're assuming that nobody has a traumatic injury. So no torn anything, no issues with the rotator cuff. So just assume that moving forward unless you hear something. So that's, yeah.
Well, and I like how you pointed out it's when the shoulder tips forward. And generally when we see that, it's because the arm has gone well past midline. You know, the shoulder can't create the mobility it needs to at the shoulder joint. So once the elbow goes well past midline, the shoulder tips forward. Mm-hmm. And that's puts way too much stress on the anterior structure. So I would agree with that. Now, I'd say with the vertical press, one of the areas that I typically will see is the initiation of the push. And that's where a lot of people will start to get it. So for those people, if they start halfway up, generally they can avoid pain and they actually feel pretty good, and then holding it up there feels fine, and then same thing, lowering it down until they get to that same sticking point, that's where they'll tend to feel it. So my next question for you is, how do you feel about overhead carries?
Oh, if they're doing them correctly, I love overhead carries. You know, granted, I know it's like kettlebell windmills, kettlebell, you know, Turkish get-ups, kettlebell arm bars, regular full-on carries, like a, you know, an overhead, like one arm up overhead on a farmer's carry. The only thing that I tend to is that position, I feel like, is very hard for, I don't do them that often because I feel like that position is very hard for somebody to, maintain the correct posture, in quotes, because we've talked about in the past, there's no such thing really as perfect posture, but that is one where I tend to see a lot of rib flare, a lot of, you know, extension in that thoracolumbar junction and that kind of thing. If I'm using it strictly as a way to increase stability overhead, then I'm all for it. If we're like looking at it as a whole line from the top all the way down from the feet, I love it. I don't use it as much as I would probably like to because of that.
Sure. I think it offers a lot of core stability, hip stability. It offers a lot of sagittal plane, transverse plane, or frontal plane stability. So I do like it a lot, but I would agree that if someone's going to cheat, it's with the overhead, but I think it's great. Yeah. And that's why I'll typically use a dumbbell. And then I actually don't mind using barbells for those, but I just typically have them go with a much wider grip.
Oh, okay.
So it's like snatch grip. And I tend that starts to take away some of the imposed demands. So I'm a huge fan of that one. But we've also talked about any type of a carry, you know, like a farmer's carry is going to be very beneficial for us. So now if we just take the weight, flip it up overhead, it's going to continue to be beneficial for us. One thing I don't like is when they do the bottom-up kettlebell. So you're holding your hand.
Yeah, overhead is a little scary for me.
Yeah, because if that kettlebell starts to go, you know, like if they're holding it right here in front of them, then I'm fine with that. But when I see people doing that overhead,
it scares me.
Yeah, I'm like, all right, it could be a dislocated shoulder. And I'm not saying we know anyone that's, you know, dislocated their shoulders with kettlebells. But it's just one of those things. It's like, if something bad is going to happen, that's when it's going to happen.
Right.
I do like even just static holds at the top. Mm-hmm. I think that offers a lot of stability for people. You can really teach them to pull the shoulder blades back, lock the shoulder in, create external rotation to really drive home kind of that screw lock mechanism that the rotator cuff is supposed to do when the arm is overhead. So, but now for all of this, you know, we always talk about function. So if someone comes to you and says, my shoulder hurts, I'm not doing a press unless you can convince me otherwise why this is good for me, how would you then relay that message back to them? Because with a horizontal press, I can say you can pick yourself up off the ground.
Right. I mean, it's a tough one. I've never been asked that question. I've never really thought about having to relay to someone why an overhead press is so important. I mean,
and no one's probably ever going to ask you. But of course, while we're here, we might as well run through the scenarios.
I mean, I would probably say that you are continuing to maintain some form of independence. Vertical press, you're not like, you know, how often are you actually taking something that's heavy and putting it up like, I mean, I'm not talking like 5 pounds. I'm not talking a cup. I'm talking like, you know, you have a bin full of Christmas decorations and you need to put it up on a top shelf. Like, there's stuff like that. So people don't tend to think, oh, I'm going to press year round because I, you know, at Christmas time, I'm going to have those heavy totes. But the reason that I'm setting it up this way is because you don't necessarily think about those things until you can no longer
lose the ability.
Right. You no longer can reach overhead to put dishes away or put a tote away, or you know, you are independent and you live on your own and you're older and you want to, I don't know, you want to repaint a room and you have to be able to reach overhead with a roller or scrape or do anything that's over the line of your shoulder. You are setting yourself up to need assistance from whoever, whatever. You're going to have to get, you know, sometime down the road, you may have to have like lower cabinets installed. That's why a lot of places for older individuals, everything is set lower. You know, that.
Well, I think you answered the question perfectly because I wasn't even thinking about that. You know, but dishes, reaching into anything overhead, reaching into cabinets, that's why we should be doing it. Now, granted, it's angled. But let's just say that you have to get those heavy Christmas totes.
Yeah.
You know, and let's say they're 25 pounds, you know, for you or I, we may not think twice about 25 pounds, but for an older individual, you have to be able to stabilize that 25 pounds. You have to be able to lower it down to the floor or to whatever surface you're going to be putting it on. You need that eccentric control.
Right, and I think the most important thing that you pointed out there is the stabilization point. Because in order to be able to maintain stabilization in dynamic, and I would consider moving something that is an oblong shape or an awkward thing, like a giant tote filled with decorations, you need to have good stability because your arms aren't going to be in the perfect press movement when you're going to have to lean forward if it's a weird shape. You know, one hand might be further forward than the other. It might be off to the side more. Yeah. You may have a really small closet and you have to almost like pick it up and rotate it, pulling it. And so if someone's like, oh, well, it's a 25-pound tote, I don't need to be pushing a 50-pound overhead. I mean, you know, whatever. Like, no, if you try and go 1-to-1, 25-pound tote to 50-pound weight, yeah, I suppose you're right. But the point is that the more that you challenge those stabilizers safely,
yes,
the lower your risk of injury is when you get into situations that are not as controlled as what you get in the gym. And that's the big thing about working out in a gym environment versus what goes on in the outside world. You have to challenge yourself in an environment that is significantly safer, like a gym where there are coaches watching your form, instructing you how to do things correctly, how to make changes if you're having pain, whatever, so that when you get into situations where it's not safe, mm-hmm. when you're out in the real world and things aren't perfectly designed to be able to lift the safest
perfectly
way possible,
controlled.
Right, you have to be, and if you only press overhead with a 25-pound weight and then you try and lift and position a 25-pound tote, it's stability-wise, that tote probably weighs closer to 45 pounds.
It's completely different.
If you were to, like, I don't know how you connect those two, but the point is that you need more stabilization than a 25-pound weight overhead affords you if you're doing something
sure.
awkward like that.
Well, it comes down to the center mass of you know, the object. It comes down to the relative center of mass of all the different, do you have to extend your arm versus can you keep it bent? Are you within your base of support? So, you know, you're looking at lines of gravity. You're also looking at different moment arms and things like that. But it really comes down to, again, the stabilization of it. So with a 25-pound tote is going to be significantly harder than just one little tiny dumbbell.
Can I add one more thing on there?
Feel free.
So overhead presses, for those of you out there that want to be able to do things with your kids, try and throw a ball if you can't reach your arm even close to up overhead. It's going to hurt like a bitch. I'll tell you that much right now. Throw a baseball, a football, play basketball, anything that involves coming up overhead. I mean, if that's stuff that interests you, then that's going to be important. And not saying that, you know, nobody who really throws anymore comes directly up overhead. That's not but the point is if
cricket?
You can't even get
to... Is that
how
they do it in cricket?
Is it? Oh, you might be right.
I think they come
I don't know that
over.
Much about cricket, but I think you're right. Now
I think
that
they come
about
under,
it.
Now that I just saw your arm moving, I think that's
Yeah, because they throw, like, down. Like, they bounce the ball. It's not... Sometimes,
and they do this weird, this different hop. I won't say weird. This different hop.
Yeah.
Things we think about when we talk.
I know,
so
right?
It's ridiculous.
So yeah. So you want to be able to put stuff up overhead. Yep. You want to be able to throw a ball. Yep. Like that stuff. In order to be able to keep that range of motion through the shoulder, is it as important as the range of motion through your knees, your hips, your ankles? No. Is it still important? Or I don't know. Maybe that's too. Maybe that's too broad.
From a functional standpoint,
yeah,
I mean, you
right.
got from the point of survival.
Yes.
You know, if you, well, think of it this way: if I cut off one of my arms,
yeah,
I, in theory, could still hunt.
Yep.
I cut off one of my legs, I'm not gonna hunt.
Nope.
So I would say the legs are more functional in the scheme of things, but when we look at the body as a whole. Let's go back to hunting.
Yeah.
You know, if we had to throw an object to kill our dinner, I need that eccentric load way back here.
Yep.
And then I'm throwing, which essentially is a pushing motion. Mm-hmm. So there goes our horizontal press. Even though I'm moving towards or through multiple planes, but that kind of just links our lower body and our upper body, and we have our core right there. Yeah, I think we just figured it out. We just solved everyone's problems. Just
there you go.
Go back to hunting.
Oh,
with
man.
A rock. But
With a rock.
So, but what's the number one compensation pattern that you see? If you just had to pick one, what's the biggest compensation pattern that you'll see with an overhead press?
The lean back or the arch in the back.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, woo. Man, that's a great way to cause problems down the road. So, most of our listeners are probably doing some of that variation. I probably do it when I get to a certain weight. What are some of the cues that you like to give to help people not lean back like that from that, what we call thoracolumbar junction or lower thoracic spine?
So, you know, the simple one is like, do a little bit of like a crunch. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I'll say like tailbone to rib cage, or, you know, if there's somebody that just really isn't getting it, maybe I put them against the wall and say, keep as much of your back against the wall as you can. One of my favorite things to do to show somebody what their true shoulder range of motion is, and I should, maybe favorite isn't the right word, but the most, sheds the most light on it, like really shows people, is have somebody hold a heavy weight in the other hand, like down, like a farmer's walk, like a loaded carry down by the side, and then try and press overhead on the other side.
Mm.
You force them to actually get their rib cage tucked, and it has to be a heavy enough weight that it, you know, you hand them a 10-pound weight in that left hand, and they're trying to press overhead with the right, they're going to still be able to arch. But you give them a 60, 70, 80-pound kettlebell in that hand that doesn't allow them to arch,
mm-hmm.
and tell them to press overhead. Even people that have pretty decent shoulder mobility struggle with that.
Oh, sure.
Never mind the people that have been, and I don't mean this in a negative way because people don't necessarily realize they're doing it, but in quotes, faking the shoulder mobility this whole time. And maybe they didn't even realize it.
Well, and that's very common. I'll see it. I'll ask patients to raise their arm up, and all of a sudden it's like, all right, bring your ribs back down, and then the arm moves 20 degrees less.
Yeah.
And they're like, whoa, that's weird. It's like, not really. All you did was just borrow from down here to make up for a loss of motion. So it's very, very common. Now, if you're dealing with a member who comes in, you know, I my shoulder doesn't hurt. I want to be able to overhead press. I just feel like my shoulder's stiff and I just can't get it there. What are some exercises, what are some mobility drills that you'll have them do to start to reestablish that pattern?
So my favorite ones are foam rolling through kind of that, I call it foam rolling the lats. So you lean on your side, the foam roller comes like horizontally right along your lats.
Mm-hmm.
But realistically, you're in that area, you're hitting so many different things that are tightening up that, you know, it really could be more like foam rolling your shoulder girdle, you know, or whatever. But so that one is a huge one. That and the serratus tend to be big ones. People are having a lot of trouble. I mean, and maybe it's the pec too, lacrosse balling the pec. Wait, I'm sorry. You said that you said it was felt stiff, which I guess pec is still fitting in there. But
have them do that.
And then maybe trap after that. If the trap is like, if they reach overhead and it just like, it comes up with them.
Sure.
Usually the first thing I'm checking is having them try loosening up the chest to see if that's where the tension is.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe the trap won't come along for the ride.
Correct.
But usually it's some sort of lacrosse balling or foam rolling underneath in that kind of lat area, kind of in the armpit sort of.
So let's say you've loosened up all the soft tissue stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What needs to occur at the thoracic spine, flexion or extension, when the arm goes overhead?
Extension.
So what are some mobility drills that you like to give for thoracic extension?
So a really good one, so one that we kind of will use here and there is like a cat-cow. And
mm-hmm.
again, that one can be a little bit difficult because if you don't have a ton of thoracic extension. You can start borrowing it from, I don't know why I waffled on that one. Thoracic extension, you might borrow it from lumbar extension or something like that. If you're looking strictly, I always like I mean, we just call it foam roller thoracic extension. Basically, you put your hands on the foam roller horizontally. You sit your butt back on your heels so you're less likely to borrow from your lumbar spine. Mm-hmm. And you just reach the arms forward and kind of sink into it.
Yeah. So I've been giving people more like a child's pose recently. Mm-hmm. So I think a child's pose is a very good exercise for that. I've also been giving like thoracic rotation exercises because in the spine, generally, rotation and extension are going to be accompanied.
Okay.
So
yeah.
If I go into left rotation, it's also left extension. So I like to give those a lot. A lot of soft tissue work in between the shoulder blades. Even something as simple as laying on the foam roller, crossing their arms to kind of get the soft tissue and the scapula out of the way, and then just leaning over the foam roller to create kind of a self-mobilization. I think those are all very good options. The only issue I have is then people start to cheat with their cervical range of motion. So they'll either start to go into cervical flexion, or you'll get the people that will end up tipping their head backwards and they're like, well, what are you choosing, cervical extension or thoracic? So you just have to be mindful with that. But you know, you got to look at all the pieces as a whole. So we talked about shoulder mobility or glenohumeral mobility. We've talked about kind of that lower thoracic, upper lumbar stabilization. Now we're talking about thoracic extension. We talked about the cervical spine. We talked about how the lats can be too tight. We talked about how all the musculature can be too tight. You know, this doesn't just happen for no reason. You know, we put our body into certain positions of comfort, and then it just becomes very good at it. So let's take sitting, for example. So Adam, let's say you're sitting at a desk for 8 to 10 hours a day, and you've been doing that for a 20-year career. What arm motion is probably going to be limited based off of that sitting posture alone?
I would say overhead.
Overhead
presses. Yeah. Or any sort of reaching overhead.
Anything. I mean, probably your arm is good at reaching out to about 90 degrees, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. You know, because you're just staying hunched over at the computer. And if you don't practice it, you lose it. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's true for any age. And it doesn't matter if it's the older adult that needs to reach into an overhead cabinet. If we lose it, then it's going to be gone. And it's very challenging to get back, especially the older that we get. You know, and then we start to see, all right, shoulder mobility's gone. Now I have to cheat from the next thing. Then I have to cheat from the next thing. Then I have to cheat from the next thing. So, you know, it's really just a vicious cycle that goes on and on. So really our goal is to just keep everything moving optimally right from the beginning. Again, it's hard to say it without kind of just giving away my thoughts on it. If someone has... So no shoulder pain,
mm-hmm.
no neck pain,
mm-hmm.
but has low back pain. You know, what are your thoughts on overhead presses?
If we can get them into a, again, neutral, in quotes, posture, something where they're not visibly hinging at that TL joint, then I am more than fine with it. And I think that's an important way, like walking it back down the line too. So like if we bring back the 25-pound Christmas decoration idea again and working that together with, you know, the extension piece. So you think like, okay, you can't reach up overhead, then what are you going to have to do? You're going to have to lean back and pull it to you, and then you have to support that weight by leaning back. And that's essentially the same as doing an overhead press but having to hinge there. You're more liable to... You know, God forbid you don't have much in the way of balance anymore and you have to lean back.
Mm-hmm.
God forbid that you go backwards or you trip stepping backwards with that weight because you can't stand upright because you don't have the shoulder range of motion. You go down or, you know, just that strain on the lower back.
Yeah.
I think if it's – and also I think if it's a if it's flared up at the moment too. I mean, these are really situational. If you have somebody – like we've had clients where you've sent them – you know, you've been working with them, they have back pain. Usually it has something to do, or well, the people that have had that specific issue with hinging from their TL joint rather than from their hips, you know, we tend to have them maybe stay away from the overhead press for a little bit until they can get that under control or until the acute inflammation and pain goes away. So in those situations, maybe we're staying away from it. But I am certainly not against it as long as we can create a more safe pattern with it.
Correct. Absolutely.
It's a long way around, a long way for a relatively simple answer.
Listen, we don't do anything simple.
No, that's true.
We
don't.
We make sure that we talk too much. We get everything out, so everyone is more and more educated on the subject. So, you know, this topic, I don't think was as sexy as the other two, just because I feel like we can lump it to functional activities greater. But for people that work out, you know, it's something that we should be able to do. And whether you want to relate it back to function or not, you know, you hit all the high points of why we should be using it. So, you know, I'm a fan of it. My shoulders became stronger once I actually started putting in the time and effort to it instead of avoiding it. You know, it's just one of those things that the more you practice it, the better habits you build. You know, not that practice makes you perfect. No, that's just kind of a dumb saying, because just practicing is not going to make you perfect. Practicing gives you a greater ability to do something. So, you know, practicing the overhead press will make you better at the overhead press. So it's the people that avoid it, the people that are apprehensive to it. You know, it's the ability to get them to be able to do it safe and in an effective manner.
So let me ask you, somebody that has assuming that these things are not a part of the issue. So, like, you know, we've checked somebody's shoulder mobility. They have, you know, decent shoulder mobility, maybe not perfect, but they can get that arm up at least in line with their, you know, elbow in line with the ear without doing any kind of crazy extension or cervical extension, flexion, any of that stuff. We know they don't have... So we know that most likely they don't have any sort of adhesive capsulitis.
Yeah.
Is that safe to say that if they can get that range of motion, they probably don't have any sort of adhesive capsulitis?
Very safe.
We know that through imaging, there's no tears, there's no issues. What would you as the practitioner say to someone who still isn't overhead pressing because they've been told that they can't by another practitioner or something along those lines? And again, I know that this is a fairly, like, you haven't actually met with said person, so this isn't as simple as I'm making it, but assuming that there's nothing structural and they actually have pretty good range of motion, what would you say to that person from your angle? Because I'll tell you that I tell people that all the time. And
from my angle, I mean, for me, it's always, listen, we don't know what your body's capable of until we ask it to do it. So it's like, unless we have a known reason, like, if I do X, it's going to cause Y. Unless we have that correlation, we have to do it. You know, it can be as simple as reaching up without a weight, you know, reach up to this target for me. It's to show them that you can't do it. So even if someone came in and said, I have a small tear in my rotator cuff, can you reach up overhead? Yep. Does it hurt? Nope. Then you're pressing overhead. Like, there's no reason why you shouldn't. It's highly unlikely that it's caught. If you are experiencing pain, it's highly unlikely that torn rotator cuff, the small torn rotator cuff, is actually causing your pain. If someone has a known labral tear, well, have you had any injury that caused it? No. Can you raise it up overhead? Yes. Do you ever feel like your arm gives out? No. Then you're overhead pressing. I fell and landed on my shoulder. All right. Do you have acute pain? Yes. Can you reach your arm overhead? No. All right. We're not pressing. So for me, it comes down to severity versus irritability, or severity and irritability, not versus. So if it doesn't flare them up, guess what? You're pressing, you know? And if someone is just really apprehensive and it comes down to psychosocial factors, that may not be something that we can fix until the person's ready.
So the other thing I kind of want to jump on before we kind of finish this up, let's go from the other angle now. The person that, because I see plenty of this too. The person that absolutely wants to overhead press no matter how many times you've shown them that they don't have the range of motion and that their shoulder is going to hurt after. Or not that you've shown them, but every single time their shoulder is sore after, and you've said, you know, I've had clients that won't necessarily take the mobility and the soft tissue work seriously, but want to come in and they want to nail that overhead press.
You know, so from my standpoint, I'd say, you know, you always do the overhead press. It always causes irritability. You know, is the bang worth the buck? So let's find a modification that works for you. And that's a place where I would choose kind of the landmine press, or, you know, let's see if we can get use a dumbbell, see if that works a little bit easier. But honestly, I think a lot of the shoulder tightness may be coming from a lack of mobility and the tightness. Honestly, just try this, you know, give it a 3-week shot and let's see if we can improve it. If not, then maybe this is just your normal range of motion. So, you know, I try not to say let's not do this, but it's like look at what you can do with a lack of mobility. If we just clean that up, can it get better? So that's probably how I would go about approaching it. Now, if it's someone who I'm close with, like if you came in and you were like, man, I'm just trying to hit the overhead press, but I don't feel like doing any soft tissue work or mobility work, then I'd say, Adam, you know what? You're just going to fuck up your shoulder then.
Yeah.
So you have two options. Yeah. Do the mobility work and soft tissue, or the shoulder's going to get tighter and eventually at some point you're going to fuck up something.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. So that's the difference between being close and comfortable with someone compared to a patient / member. I would never say that to a patient, but for you, I would gladly say that. I'd be like, we can correct this, but if you don't want to do anything about it, that's fine, but just understand you are not going to get any better based off of X, Y, and Z.
Right. And I think that, yeah, you know, that comes back around to the stuff that we've talked about in, you know, the other podcasts. Was it last week? Must have been. Whatever week we talked about the knee dominant stuff. No, it was when we were talking about the deadlift. We were talking about people telling you should never deadlift and that's not their decision to make. But again, so like those are your options. So like it's not telling you, you know, you or I are not telling someone, okay, you should never overhead press. We're saying, if you want to overhead press, absolutely. Here's what you're going to do it safely. And if you don't want to do that, then 5 years down the road, may not even be 5 years, depending on how bad your mobility actually is and how much you're borrowing from other places. It could be, you know, next week, yeah, depending on how bad it is. You're going to have a fucked up shoulder, and then you're not going to be able to do shit with it.
That is perfect. I mean, that is, I couldn't have said it better myself. But, you know, I think what we should point out right now, you know, we spend this whole time talking about how structural issues aren't that big of a deal, blah, 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 blah. You know, if you take an abnormal movement pattern and do a bad pattern over and over and over again, it creates abnormal stress on normal tissue, which then normal tissue turns abnormal, which then reacts negatively to normal stress. It's a vicious cycle we all fall into. If you take that abnormal overhead press and you don't want to correct the mobility, you don't want to correct the soft tissue, you do run the risk of now putting too much stress on the anterior shoulder, which can lead to a rotator cuff tear, a torn labrum, a fray in the bicep tendon, bursitis. Fucking take your pick, any of them. So when we downplay structural issues, we recognize that they're there. You know, we're not saying they don't exist. They exist, but they're not the problem that we are led to believe at the same rate. However, if you take a bad pattern and you continuously do something bad over and over again, something bad is going to happen. Something will give, and that's why we see the high rate of ruptures that we do in between the fourth and the sixth decade. It's why we start to see degeneration in people over the age of 70. It's repetitive stress over time. So I'm not even talking about traumatic events. Mm-hmm, I'm just talking about repetitive stress, and that's just the stress of life, the stress of bad movement patterns. So, but again, that's why we offer up the information that we do, to make our 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s better, so that then we can have more fruitful 70s and 80s, 90s, and even for those of us who choose to stick around that long, hundreds.
Right. What's really awesome about the overhead press too, this is kind of with any movement, but I notice it most with the overhead press because the changes are so noticeable when you have them. But yeah, if you have a lockdown shoulder, you're the first few weeks you may have to spend, you know, maybe 10-15 minutes might be a little bit strong. If your goal is to, like, I want to be able to press a 70-pound weight overhead by the end of the month or by the end of 2 months, then okay, you may have to, the first week or two, you may have to spend 10 minutes prior to your training just working on loosening up that shoulder. Assuming that you have a fairly, like, locked down shoulder, not like, okay, you could get 2 inches more,
yeah,
or 2 degrees more of shoulder flexion. You may have to spend 10 or 15 minutes doing that before you train that overhead pattern. Mm-hmm. But the more that you layer the strength in that new pattern, the more that you loosen it up, so now you can get here, and then you press there. And then you loosen it up, and you get stronger there. And you loosen it up, and you're doing the same pattern, but you're getting stronger every single time. The less of that other soft tissue work you have to do, because that, once you, in the same way that if you strengthen a poor, in quotes, movement pattern, if you strengthen a good movement pattern, then you don't have to do as much of the setup preparatory stuff. You know, there are going to be days where you're colder than others and you got to do a little bit more, or, you know, it's hotter and you feel like good, so there's a little bit less. But,
yeah, but
on the whole,
your body, yes, your body needs less overall.
Right.
I was just thinking about Austin Powers when Dr. Evil had Operation Preparation H.
Yes.
And he talked about being on the whole.
Yeah.
That's why I laughed right there. So that was perfect.
Nice.
Oh, God, that movie takes me back. But it's true. The better we move, the less soft tissue restriction we have, the less we have to do to keep up with it. But you got to put in the work first.
Yep.
No, there's not one of us in here that's in this gym. You know, you, myself, Megan, Ashley, Dylan's still kind of young, so maybe. But we're all tight all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, is there ever a workout day that you can just come in, jump into a workout without warming up?
No.
You know, not for the fact that you don't want to warm up.
No,
but
right,
you feel like, man, I'm fucking stiff today. If I don't do lacrosse ball and some stretches and some mobility work, like, this is just not going
to
be a good
day. I won't
be
able to train tomorrow.
Yeah. So that's every day I work out.
Yeah.
You know, and that's pretty much, like, we were talking about how I did Murph on Monday. Like, when I stand up from this chair, I feel like Optimus Prime. I feel like a robot when I'm walking.
Yeah.
And then once I'm up and moving, and it's like, the next time I go to work out, I'm probably just going to get on the bike and warm up, just get blood flow,
right,
and then I'll see how I feel. Because it's like, I can't jump right into a workout and do this, or else it's going to kill me. So.
Yep. So, guys, again, being proactive going to save you a lot of time in the long run. So, unless you have anything else, Ross, I think we'll cut it there. I think, so next week, this podcast will come out on Thursday like it has in the past. We're recording this on Wednesday. Next week's maybe a little later on Thursday or even Friday, depending, based on your schedule, what I can't remember off the top of my head. But, so it won't be the exact same time release-wise next week, but we'll have something for you.
Yeah, we'll figure something out.
Yeah.
I mean, between you know, the next couple of weeks may be thrown off just for the fact that I'll take a couple of days off. I believe you have a vacation coming up, but
yeah,
we'll make sure we get some content out there for you guys. So in case anyone's going on a long run, in case anyone is flying anywhere, in case anyone's just bored and needs something to do, we'll make sure that we have content waiting for you.
Perfect. But when's your next Ask Ross Anything?
It's not going to be until June 9th because
okay,
I leave today to go to, no, maybe it's the week after. No,
the ninth
it was supposed to be tomorrow, so it's next week. So
okay,
there was 3 weeks this time because I'll be at Tufts for the next 5-6 days.
All right, guys, so you guys just know the drill. Link to that is in the description. If you want to be on the page for Ross's Ask Ross Anything, that's next Thursday at 7:30 Eastern time. That's the 9th. June 9th will be the next one. So get in there before then. Ask any questions. And until next time, we'll catch you guys later.
Take care.